We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Hello and welcome to the Commonwealth Institute and to My Music, a panel game of sorts, a competition between teams of two, John Amis and Frank Muir versus Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. So, first question goes to John Amis. John, here's some beefy music. Title and composer, John.
It's from Pulcinella, ballet by Pergolesi, mucked about a bit by Stravinsky.
Yes, that was very much the Stravinsky version there, wasn't it?
I was going to say that.
That phrase, da-da-dee, where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day.
Da-da-dum, da-da-dum. What's that newsreel?
Da-da-da. Oh, yes.
That's right.
Frank, your turn. Here's an instrument you'll be familiar with, more so perhaps in the next life than in this.
Wait for it.
Charming. Charmant.
I know. 2 marks. It's a harp.
Well, no, that isn't the question, actually. The question is, Frank, you've often seen the harp played.
Many times.
Which shoulder does it rest on, and which hand plays the top or treble part? You may have help from your mate there.
Now, Harpo Marx got it wrong, didn't
That's
he?
Right, yes.
Because he saw an illustration of it in a mirror or something, on the wrong shoulder. Yes, hang on, you've got the pedals, one for dampening the strings and the other for dipping the headlights. It doesn't go in the middle of the nose, like a bowstring, does it?
It does if you're on
the
boat.
Hang on. The left hand.
Your friend is trying to tell you. He's desperately trying to help you over there.
No, the left hand does the twiddly bits.
All right. Which shoulder is it on to start with, normally?
It's not on the shoulder, it's on the ground. You couldn't.
Right or left shoulder, please?
You reckon it's the right?
I think so. Have a guess.
Ooh, well, 50% of this side of the team thinks it's on the right shoulder.
You're likely to be 50%.
On the left shoulder, you pay the top of the right hand.
I'm going to call a halt.
The left shoulder.
You're right. No, you're right first time. It rests on the right shoulder.
Oh, you fool. And you musicologist.
Well, there you are. You look through the strings,
yes,
and
the
you see your hands. Which hand is playing the treble part, the right hand or the left hand?
It's the side your face is on. It's the hand where your face is.
I wish I'd never started this.
It's ting, 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 ting.
Why don't we give him 3 out of 2? I think you mean to be right.
Yes, right.
Right, right. Yes, the right hand. Right shoulder, right hand is the answer to my question. Ian, complete change of subject. What has this music to do with a cheesemonger named Lightgib?
Well, one morning in Salzburg, Mozart was sitting writing a horn concerto, and he had got to the last movement. He was just beginning the last movement when a cheesemonger called Lightgeb, did you say his name?
Lightgeb, yes.
Arrived, and he said, "Herr Mozart, I have been bringing cheeses to this house every week for a long time. You don't pay me any money, nothing at all, and I don't know what to do. Maybe you, when you finish what you are writing now, you give it to me in payment for all these gruyères and the bel paese I import from Italy for you." And Mozart just looked at him and says, "What has this music to do with a cheesemonger like you?" So the answer is nothing.
I'm only going to give you one mark out of two, because...
Have I got one mark?
Well, yeah, yes, one out of two, one for ingenuity. But Mozart wrote the concerto, home concertos, for a cheesemonger who played the horn. His name was Leitgeb, and he's very good, too. He wrote the concertos for him. That was, in case anybody wants to know, from the horn concerto, the fourth horn concerto. Dennis, your question. Why should this recording make me think of American... There are two reasons. Make me think of American transportation.
I'm not going to attempt to plumb the way your mind works, because I don't know what makes you think of American transportation, but the name of the song is Tuxedo Junction, which I've always assumed to be a railway station. It may be a kind of flyover, I don't know. You know,
like, it certainly sounds like one, so it would remind
me. And I don't think, I think that's the modern, that's the updated one. Yes, it's that... that lot who are living off the past, like quite a lot of us are today.
There's the second Transportation Association.
The Manhattan Transfer.
Manhattan Transfer, yes, which is also to do with
transport. Tuxedo Junction was where the bottom of the dinner jacket touched the top of the trousers. Which gives a different meaning to the expression flyover.
That. And let's move on to the next round. The subject of this next round is Handel. John, which is the first chorus in Handel's Messiah? Work your way through quickly.
It's in A major.
Yes,
and it is.
Shall I play you a bit of it?
Tum bum bum ba dum bum 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 bee.
Yes, that's it. And it's.
Boys.
And the glory of the Lord.
That's right, and the glory of the Lord gets you the mark. It's the first chorus in the song. That's right. Frank, Handel and Bach had something in common with Pepys and Milton. What was it?
They were all lived in the 18th century except Pepys and Milton. they all worked in England. One time or other.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did. Who didn't?
Bach.
No, Bach didn't. No.
J.C. Bach.
And anyway...
Anyway, you're on my side, may I remind you.
And anyway, Pepys did live into the 18th century, just.
Do you think the 1685...
No, no, don't bother about dates. No,
well, give us a hint. I'll trade you a quarter of a mark for it.
Well, the answer is interesting. Handel and Bach both suffered from the attentions of a certain itinerant gentleman... And they shared something in that sense with Pepys and Milton.
Milton was blind, and Pepys stopped writing his diary because of failing eyesight.
You got it. They all suffered from failing sight.
They
all suffered from failing sight. Pepys didn't go blind, did he? Thought he was going to. No, they all suffered from failing sight. And the terrible thing, as John will confirm, is that some itinerant eye surgeon wandering around over Europe managed practically to blind both Handel and Bach. Quite something to say when you get up to the pearly gates, isn't it?
No, but mind you, when you realise how much they wrote and the kind of light they wrote by, it's not surprising.
No, indeed. Ian, which is the only duet in Messiah?
Oh, well, I won't waste your time on that one. It's
good.
Death, Where Is Thy Sting?
Alto for alto and tenor. Dennis, back to you. What can you tell me about Love in Bath? Nobody can say it. Nobody can say it.
The water keeps growing cold. That's the only thing I get. I can't tell you anything. I presume it's something by hand. It could be a one-night gig in Somerset by Jeff Love and his orchestra. but if, on the hand, Beecham arranged the whole session. Beecham Beecham arranged it or Beecham annoyed it, according to your
record. He snatched the paper out of my hand before I could write it.
I'm sorry,
I think it was a ballet suite.
It's a good commercial for the pen at the same time.
Yes, a ballet suite by music by Handel, arranged by Sir Thomas Beecham.
Yes.
Charming. It began. Very charming music, lovely, lovely sweet.
once heard him conduct this at the Edinburgh Festival many, many years ago, of course, and sitting in the organ, the choir stalls, so that we were sort of very, very near to him. I never realised that Sir Thomas, when he was conducting, made such loud noises yes. to the orchestra yes. as he was going... He beat the bar. It was marvellous.
Proper little Oscar Peterson he was. Just beside my right hand is this grand pianoforte equipped with the usual number of black and white teeth, on which I propose now to play a medley. This is where the two teams work as pairs, noting down on their pens, ink and paper the titles of the six tunes I'm about to play. Frank wants a bit of help. It's up to me to see he doesn't get it. A medley then, first of all, for John and Frank. Ended up better than it began. Right, John. John and Frank, did you get the 16th?
Title first. Jop Scotland.
Is it the Maple Leaf?
No, it wasn't. It was more entertaining than that.
I've got a premonition that I don't know what it's called.
The Entertainer, thank you. Right, give you that little hint. Then came a march.
Blaze Away.
Yes, you got it. Then another march.
Sousa.
I can't read my writing.
Yes, by Sousa, but which one?
Ah. It's number five.
I'm not going for that. It was the Washington Post.
Oh, yes. It's too late for the Washington Post.
Man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Take me back to dear old Blighty.
Yes, and?
Stately Holmes.
Oh, five out of six. Great stuff. Yes. The way to do it, very nearly. And a second medley for Ian and Dennis this time. Quick dash, as we call it in the trade.
Right,
through six tunes, right. Did you get the titles?
Yes, I think you've done one of these double bluffs here. Washington Post.
Yes, Washington Post. A different bit of it.
Yes, that was before the bit that goes Queen of all the fairies.
Then a memory of Flotsam and Jetsam.
Yes, changing of the guard, was it?
Yes, you shall see the changing of the guard. Do that again. That was lovely.
You wonder how he gets them.
And then came
Little Dolly Daydream.
Not Little Betty Bouncer, no. Little Dolly Daydream, that's right.
Yeah.
Three more.
Semper Fidelis.
Oh, yes.
I was very lucky last year when we did a concert on the 4th of July with a guards band playing all these marches.
Oh, you've learned. You've got them down this time then, yes. Two more.
Jumping.
Yes, Jumping Bean, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know the last one.
It's. You want it? Hey, look me up.
That's it.
Hey, look me up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do that again.
Yeah. Six out of six. Let's move on to some memorable voices of the past. How memorable we shall now find out. John, this recording was made in 1932. Can you name the singer?
It sounds like Elizabeth Schumann to me.
Absolutely right for a mark, yes.
She's a Schumann. Sweet lady. Yes. And she once came to a summer school I have something to do with, and she was giving a lesson to a very young-looking girl, and this girl was singing a love song. And she said, "Ach, my dear, I must stop you. I think you don't understand the words." And the girl said, "Well, actually, Madame Schumann, I am German. I'm a refugee." She said, "Oh, so, but it is a love song. Perhaps you have never been in love, my dear." And she said, "Madame Schumann, I may look very young, but I've got three children." "Ach, my dear," she said, "just sing. I say no more."
What a nice lady. Yes. It was she, Elizabeth Schumann, recorded there at the age of almost 50, so pretty good. Frank, this lady was born in 1915. She had a sudden success just after the Second World War.
"Oh, he's got a fine brown frame. I wonder what could be his name. He looks good to me, and all I can see is his fine brown frame."
You know, of course.
Yes.
Her first big hit was Hurry On Down, and then came that.
Nelly...
Yes.
Lutcher.
Nelly Lutcher.
You've got it between. Nelly Lutcher is right. Yes, that deserves a round of applause. Ian, back to opera. This lady lived from 1861 to 1931, and the recording was made, rather distantly as you'll hear, in 1905. Sounds like Chloe Lost in the Swampland, doesn't it?
I think that was the lady... John was talking about the things that Elizabeth Schumann said. I think that was the lady who sent a message to the senior chef at the Savoy and said, "What do you mess up a perfectly good peach with ice cream and Melba sauce?"
That's right. That was the lady, Dame Nelly.
Dame Nelly
Melba, it was, singing some Gounod. Yeah. Dennis, there were various versions of the atmospheric song Ebb Tide. This, I think, was my favourite. Lovely record, yeah. Isn't it?
He had kind of boiled egg eyes, didn't he?
Yes.
Bulge out his great moustache. Jerry Colonna.
Jerry Colonna. He's a musician originally. He even made some records that are still collected by jazz people,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
He made a record called Hey Barmaid. Do you remember that?
No.
Lovely. It consisted of a little jingly musical phrase, and he, in between every phrase, he said, "Hey, barmaid," rather the way you would, the way you're trying to attract the attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And he eventually gets more and more furious and tries different wiles. He says, "Hey, barmaid." And he says, "Hey, barmaid." And finally, of course, "Hey, barmaid." Lovely record. Let's move on to the final round, which is what we call the party piece. A drop of singing, or in John's and Ian's cases, more than a drop, a full tot, you might say. John, you first. Charles Stewart landed on South Uist in the Outer Hebrides at a place called Eriskay. Can you oblige with a verse or so of that song? And shall I give you a chord of G? Which was about
yeah.
Your range, I should.
Why not? I think yes. When I'm lonely, dear white heart, black the night or wild the sea, lie by love's light, my foes glimpse the pathway to thee. There me o'er You know, the nicest version I know of that on record is sung by the Polish Army Choir, who were formed in this country, or rather more in Scotland. They were stationed during the war. And they sang this very, very beautifully. And a friend of mine was an airman, and he went to a concert in Aberdeenshire, and there were about 3,000 airmen in this stadium. And they did their Polish Army bit, and they did their Polish bit, and then they did two Scots songs, the Eris Kay Lovelilt, and they were introduced by one of their singers, Marian Nowakowski, who was a lovely, big operatic bass. But his English was only very, very slightly better than the rest of his countrymen. And when they finished the Eris Kay Lovelilt, he said, "And now we sing another Scotch song, Stop Tickling Your Jock."
Frank, once again, it's...
Sounds like the gay Gordons.
Press on.
I did a performance of La Bohème with Marian Nowakowski, beautiful singer. And it's a famous night when he and I were striking attitudes of grief on a chest of drawers at the back of this set, and Mimi was dying, and she was singing away to saying, "Buongiorno, Marcello," all this sort of thing, and he turned to me and he said to me, "I've forgotten the code song." So I said to him, because we were singing it in Italian, I said, "Vecchia cimara senti." He said, "No." "Not the words, the tune." And sure enough, I was trying to sing in the tune against the other music, but the beginning is all on one note, so I was going... He said, no, I knew that.
Oh dear. We better go on, I think.
Good luck.
Frank, once again, it's back in history. Oliver Cromwell inspired a song for Mary Lloyd. You pick a key and I'll try and find out which one it is.
Right? Drops the tone of the piece a bit, doesn't it? I'm up a bit. I'm
try that.
Overblow, yes. I'm not too fast. There. I'm one of the ruins of Cromwell, knocked about a bit. Oh, and then Oliver Cromwell knocked about a bit. In the gay old days, there used to be some doings. Now wonder that the poor old abbey's all in ruins. Folks who study history sing a shout of it. Well, you bet your life there isn't a doubt of it. Outside the Oliver Cromwell last Saturday night, I was one of the ruins of Cromwell, not the bars a bit.
Dennis, your heyday came a bit after Cromwell's. In World War II, there was a super sentimental song called Shake Down the Stars. How can you... Can you manage a ring now?
Yeah, no. Steve, don't play it, because because this song's actually a collector's piece, not because of the tune, so it doesn't matter what I ruin of the tune this particular week. Shake Down the Stars was recorded by Sinatra, and it was recorded by Ella Fitzgerald, and it was a kind of a mild hit in those days. But only a very small coterie of people noticed the lyric of the middle eight. The actual song goes, "Shake down the stars, tear down the moon, tear down the clouds, do it soon." Stay out of it, Steve, because it doesn't matter about the music. It really doesn't matter about the music. But that was the general theme of the song. And the middle bit went, and I hope I can remember this, "I gave you my arms, my lips, my heart, my love, my life, my all. But the best that I had to offer you, I found was all too small." And nobody ever noticed it. if anybody's got the Glenn Miller Memorial album, it's on that as well, and you can check it. Yes.
Must give you the mark, I think, for that. No, you didn't sing it. Ian, round about the year you were born, there was a show in London called Good Morning, Dearie.
That's what my mother said to me when I was born.
From it came Look for the Silver Lining.
Okay.
Look for the silver lining whenever a cloud appears in the blue. Remember somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing it will do is make it shine for you. A heart full of joy and gladness will banish sadness and strife. So try to look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life.
Lovely.
We had one banished too many.
Yeah, well, yes, but we ended together, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
I'm afraid that's all for this edition. According to the score, it's a victory for John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis North. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Schreiber.